When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Pretty pumped for this, actually. Hello, so we're back. Hooray! Yes, it's time for us to return to the raison d'etre, as fantasy football is slated to return alongside the Premier League on June the 17th. Obviously, we love doing our Sunday Side Eye stuff and the lockdown pods, but really what we've been doing is tidying ourselves over until FPL comes back, and I know we're really excited, really pumped, as the kids say, to get going. Joined today, of course, by the Rory Faria and Steve Holland, my Mourinho, in Nick and Anthony. Nick, I'll let you guys guess who I think he is. You all right?
I'm good, thank you. Would you think I'm the attack dog, Rory Faria? Maybe. The Premier League's back, and by extension, fancy Premier League's back. So we're still kind of waiting for the sites for the open time recording and the full fixture schedule. But there's plenty of stuff to talk about and stuff for us to sink our teeth into. We are Who Got the Assist. We're on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, main account Tom, at WGTA_Nick. At FPL Stag, and we're also on Instagram. If you're on Insta, make sure to give us a follow, WGTA.FPL. So, Anthony, how are you doing? You're back in Ireland now, right? What's on the agenda for today?
Yeah, so just back home as of Saturday. So it's lovely to be back in Ireland at this stage. I had the surreal experience of going through empty departures areas and being on a plane with just 25 others, even though it was a regular commercial Ryanair flight like everyone's ever been on. Really, really surreal experience doing all that with a mask on. But now I've got 2 weeks of splendid self-isolation in Cork to look forward to. No better place to be stuck, I'd say. But yes indeed, the countdown has begun towards June 17th, and we're going to get our thinking caps on to discuss different aspects of the return of the football. So I guess the Bundesliga has given us with a glimpse behind the curtain at what football will look like already, and that has raised questions about the twin towers in FPL selection, form and fixtures. On top of that, then, there's a truncated and unusual pre-season that's going on at the moment, and of course I'm using air quotes for pre-season, but in terms of the time since a ball was last kicked, you're talking 3 months. So that's a pretty standard summer break usually. And we have a chocker schedule that's going to be 9 game weeks in 6 weeks for the season to finish in August. So there's going to be huge ramifications for the bane of FPL managers, R&R, which is, of course, rotation and resting. So we have all that to consider. And how will Pep deal with having 5 attempts to get rid of Sergio Aguero off the pitch before the 60 minutes? It's going to be pretty difficult. So lots to consider and lots to chew on.
Definitely, there's going to be lots of XX warming up. OMG, is this the end of Aguero? Any time from 45 minutes onwards, isn't there, with Pep? We will get into that in just a minute. So as Anthony's just summarised, yes, it is the return of FPL. And this is 3 things to think about as the fantasy football returns. It's current form in the bin, is home advantage in the bin, it's injuries and rotation galore, and it's finding value in limited / threatened minutes. We're going to talk about the teams and players in more detail next week. That's because there's no fixtures yet. It's still not been announced exactly how that's going to shake out. We'll talk about how FPL have worded their announcement shortly. But this one becomes more of like a broad brushstroke of things to watch out for ahead of the return of fantasy football, rather than going into the weeds of players and team specific. Rest assured that will come. And obvious caveats apply, of course. More important things going on in the world, we know that. # Black Lives Matter. But we're here to talk about FPL, and that's what we're going to do, as Nick used to say at the beginning of our podcast for long-term listeners. So let's get into it. The news section. The big news from FPL was on Saturday the 30th, an announcement, and a very cautiously worded one at that, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we know that there's going to be a double game week at least. I think there were concerns from a few people around that FPL wasn't even going to be able to come back at all. So it is great to see some sort of official update that FPL is back, but the website's not ready. We know there's going to be a double game week at the start with Aston Villa versus Sheffield United and Manchester City versus Arsenal playing at the beginning of the week, and scheduled to take place on the 17th of June, which incidentally is my wedding anniversary as well. But yeah, so the FPL officially announced that once the date is confirmed and the remaining fixtures have been announced, our plan is to resume FPL with additional multiple game weeks created to reflect the remaining 92 fixtures. And they've also said that we'd like to remind managers that any chips you retain at present, i.e. triple captain, bench boost, free hits and all the wildcard, would remain available for you in accordance with the game rules for these game weeks.
Additional multiple game weeks, I think that could mean anything effectively. That could be that they have, you know, game weeks first 9 to 48. They could bundle game weeks together into double game weeks. We just don't know. And it's interesting as well to see the fact that there's football scheduled to be every single day, how they package them together as game weeks, whether it is kind of Saturday to Monday is one lot and Tuesday to Thursday is the next. I just don't know how that's going to work. But the other thing to kind of note, and the big outtake a lot of people did take from this, is that doesn't seem to be a welcome wild card. There's been hours of arguments on this online that I've been laughing at, frankly, rather than taking part in. But I mean, we did have a question on this, and I think it's worth just mentioning quickly before we move on to the free things. So Simon Ungawa, chairman, asks, do you think that the integrity of the game is in doubt if FPL opted for a strategy such as allowing unlimited changes? Stag, as a man who was travelling, so probably out of this argument a little bit, what's your view on this?
Yeah, my only role in the whole argument was to suggest that the whole FPL season should be canned, and I got pillared for that. So no, it wasn't involved in the wildcard discussion too much. But no, I guess if I was pro canning the season, it would be pretty ridiculous for me to be anti the welcome wildcard, as we're calling it. I think that in truth, the season has changed so much that the integrity of it from an FPL standpoint, especially because we don't know the fixtures or anything, like the teams were set up for a certain run of fixtures. They're no longer set up for that now, because we don't know how it's all going to look. So of course you're going to need to make changes, and the wildcard only at least should allow people to get ready again. And at the end of the day, if you think that you deserve your rank and you deserve to be doing well this season and that you have the ability and you weren't just being lucky, then you shouldn't feel too aggrieved with having the chance to fix your team and be able to beat the living daylights out of everyone over the course of 9 game weeks, especially if you held your chips and you were being careful earlier in the season. So I think that overall, no, I don't think the integrity of the game is in any way in doubt if there were extra chips. And personally, I really think they should have given us the wild card at minimum.
Oh, interesting. Nick, where do you stand on this?
So I actually lean on the side that sort of giving out a free wild card will lend a little bit of an unfair advantage. And it'd probably be best to just give everyone the two free transfers that they would have likely to accrued over the end of game week 38. I mean, from my perspective, many managers like myself have been sitting on their wild cards and free hits and have been holding them for that season close. Other managers like yourselves used the wild card early. And I think, from my perspective, it would give an advantage going into the close season compared to managers like myself who still have their chips active. So I think, I can't remember the game weeks, but I know that you guys used them a lot earlier, about sort of six, some game weeks prior to the end of the season. So you had plenty of time to sort of work with a refreshed squad whilst people like myself was, you know, saving them for later game weeks. Now, if you guys were to have that extra wild card or to be gifted a new wild card like myself, and then I'd still have one in the arsenal that I wouldn't necessarily want to use straight away or even need to use if I now...
If we were gifted that, Nick, would that just not mean that you'd still have your wild card to destroy us on a double game week or whatever with, you know, superior picking, if that makes sense? Well, like,
I don't even know if there are going to be double game weeks at this stage.
This is true, okay. So
I think it's like we all have a wild card and then I just end up with another one. And even I was actually looking at my team and I don't even think I need a wild card. I'm quite set up for this double game week with my double Arsenal, my double Sheffield United, Manchester City coverage as well. So like, I don't, to be honest, I mean, as I said, we didn't want to have an argument about this, and because there's obviously lots of chat on Twitter, I just don't think it's necessary. And I think that, you know, many managers should already be prepared, and a couple of free transfers should be enough to get yourself ready.
But what they're prepared for is something totally different to what we're having.
Well, we already knew that these fixtures were going to be coming up anyway. So it's the same fixtures. It's just maybe a different personnel. Who knows? But we don't know. It's like a start of the season anyway. So who knows? The form isn't going on to other questions, but the form's out the window.
Yeah, so I think there's certainly lots of arguments on this. I can see both sides. And actually, at the risk of sounding like I've got a pole stuck up my arse, I'm very centrist on this one. So I can see both sides. The fairness for the managers that have kept theirs and the fun. I think that's where Stag's coming from here. It's the fun for those who haven't. And fundamentally, the marketeer in me takes over a bit when I look at this because, I mean, Stag's summer of FPL hasn't happened to the delight of many commenters on Twitter. But, you know, it has been mentioned a lot of times that the fun factor is really important. It's a huge marketing weapon for FPL to get the target market engaged. Guess what? The target market is not us nerds. It's your casuals and a double game week plus a wild card. Like, that's such marketing gold for them, I think. And I'm a bit surprised that they haven't said anything yet, but because of how carefully worded the statement was, it didn't rule out that possibility either. And note that the Bundesliga, for example, when FBL came back, also gave unlimited transfers when you came in, and it didn't really impact things too much from what I hear of the hardcore anyway on Twitter. I could see why people might say, oh yeah, you've had a bad season, so you would say you can have an extra wild card. Yeah, but I mean, maybe it's nomenclature because it's not like I've got two wild cards in the pocket. It's not a wild card that you can keep. You've got to use those imminent chances when you get straight in. I don't know. I don't mind that. I definitely wouldn't want them to reissue chips. I think that would be like too far. I am on the side of fun, but organized fun. Those kind of like David Brent. I think that's kind of the way I look at it. So yeah, unlimited transfers. I don't mind if that comes in because I think it's fine. And as Stag said, like, you know, you guys who have sat on your wild card, you still can get another wild card. You just got a little bit of time to refresh. But yeah, again, I can see when it's coming from too. Basically, I don't care. If it comes back with a wild card, great. If it doesn't, great, because it's still back. But yeah, it was an interesting diversion for a short time on FPL Twitter. I loved it, the fact that the first thing that those people did after 11, 12 weeks away was to come on and start arguing with each other. Like, that's just so FPL Twitter in a nutshell.
You just used your wild card already.
Hilarious, absolutely hilarious. Right, speaking of hilarity, jocularity and fun, let's talk about the three things that are watch outs for FPL managers as the competition resumes. The first thing to mention is home advantage and current form both going into the bin. Is this the death of home advantage? So interestingly, we're going to be looking at the Bundesliga a little bit. And to this point, Angus McPhail asked if we'd learned anything from the German top tier's return. And Adam Pritchard asked if those playing FBL will have any advantage. Now, when I was speaking to Neil Murray quite a while ago about the return of the Bundesliga, it was really cool, Fred. And one of the things we did pick up on was the kind of this home advantage heuristic and how that's going to be really challenged. So when we make decisions in FPL, a lot of the time we look at the home player and favour them unconsciously over the away player. Although recent times, you know, stuff like Adam Hopcroft saying the away teams actually get more space has challenged that a little bit. But you know, without this throaty crowd and without kind of that element which could, you know, impact decisions, you know, make other teams play differently, I mean, could that have an impact on our decision making? What do you guys reckon?
So I think if you look at what's gone on in the Bundesliga, especially, like, the evidence is pretty stark that without having fans in the stadium and whatever else that goes with it of having a home game, teams are really, really, really dropping off at home. And up until now, we've seen that basically what you'd expect is kind of approximately 40% of games resulting in home wins, and that's cutting down by about half. So pretty substantial change in, you know, the bias that we would give to your standard home player. And your away teams especially, it's actually the away teams are winning. It's not just that the games are becoming draws because teams are playing less intensely or whatever. It's actually that the away teams are coming away with wins quite consistently. Like, even in the most recent weekend of FBL action, you're talking about nearly half the games where the away team has won again. It's pretty remarkable how much things have changed. And that's before you even get into the talk of sharpness and number of clean sheets and things.
We've got this kind of inherent bias amongst ourselves that we see that big H in brackets and think, right, he's the perfect person to captain, for instance. And, you know, these sort of decisions do need to have the reality that there's no crowds in anymore. So, you know, why not captain a player who's got an away fixture? Because it doesn't mean anything in the same way. As much as, you know, the chairman of Brighton would like to think that the Amex is still a fortress and don't need to play at a neutral venue, I think from the analysis done of what's happened with the Bundesliga so far, it puts scorn to that. And the fact that, yeah, the home advantage doesn't really exist any longer. I think sort of in relation to Adam's question as well, I think, you know, FPL, it's been really fun, actually. And I don't know if it, you know, playing that has given anyone an advantage over FPL, because it's a very different game. It's another form of fantasy game. I think you don't need to play the FPL to see what's going on in the Bundesliga and what's happening with the home teams and the away teams. You could do that outside of fantasy. But I think maybe the likes of Tom rediscovering his hot hand with the pressure off might mean that he can bring that to his FBL game again, since he's been lacking success since we started the pod. Perhaps that will be a factor, but I don't know if there's anything else that we've really learned from playing fantasy Bundesliga that we can bring to our FBL game.
I think same with the champ, man. One of the things I have kind of learned is to throw off my like reliance on ownership, because honestly, I honestly haven't checked it, just done what I think looks best like for my team, and I've done pretty well. I haven't done that well in champ, man, but I've done that well, and it's kind of rediscovering that fun factor, because a lot of the time it's decidedly meh, isn't it, like sitting on the most captained player and owning the most owned assets and wearing that template armor with aplomb into battle every weekend. It's not fun. And it's been more fun to kind of have that kind of do or die, sink or swim sort of thing, where you're taking more risks. So, you know, I triple captain Veron for those people who've been playing Champman FPL the other week, and no one did that. And I got 57 points because he scored 2 goals in 2 games. That was brilliant. That was such a great moment. And in the Bundesliga, like, I've had a lot of like little moments like that have just come through, and I'm doing all right. And it's nice to do that, because you feel a bit more kind of, you feel the successes a bit more. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to throw off those shackles of like, oh yeah, what everyone else is doing when FPL returns. But in terms of the data, I mean, Anthony did allude to this a second ago. There are kind of a lot of data points which do seem to show that home advantage is probably going to be frittered away a tiny bit. But from the data I've seen and the data I'm sure Anthony's going to walk us through in a second, he's waving animatedly at me. You know, this lack of home wins is really going to have an impact on FPL, we think.
Yeah, so we're 4 game weeks into that FBL season now since they've restarted. So 36 game played. And in that, 50% of the games have resulted in an away win. So that's a huge difference from your standard, which is about 36% of away wins across the rest of the season in the Bundesliga before now. And only about 22-ish percent are resulting in home wins. So that's down from about 42%. And, you know, the draws are obviously the remainder of that, which is just over a quarter. So you're talking about pretty remarkable differences, but especially in away wins. And so that, as the guys were talking about, that little H symbol beside a player's name doesn't necessarily mean that that's a greater reason to captain them more than anything. We've also seen that, you know, a lack of sharpness and cohesiveness in defenses, especially in the top teams, you know, that you might have expected more from. So there've only been about 20 clean sheets off 72 possible clean sheets to be got. So that's pretty low as well. And we've also seen a spike in red cards. So in the 4 weeks before COVID hit the Bundesliga, there'd been 2, and there've been 7 in the 4 weeks since. So is that all showing that, you know, the defenders are just being a bit more unfit and they're just having to dive in that bit more? Is it a lack of sharpness that they're mistiming their tackles? Either way, this overall dip in intensity, the stats bear it out. The tackles are down, the passes and pass accuracy are up as well, which I think definitely feeds into what people have been watching, which has been often ponderous pass about games where there hasn't been overly taxing attempts at, you know, pressing and attacking, pushing through defenses with pace, I think, otherwise. So is that a lack of fans push egging teams on, or is the lack of fitness? Hard to tell, but either way, I think it's something that we can expect when the Premier League returns.
Yeah, I think that lack of sharpness, I think, is definitely going to have an impact. We spoke about that when a little while ago, didn't we? And I found some stats from a Trackademic looking into this as well, and they showed that only 50% of Bundesliga's teams have maintained their pre-lockdown running distances, and only 56% of teams maintain their pre-lockdown sprinting volume. So we're likely to see a lack of intensity overall. I think we're very likely to see kind of friendly pace games. We're not going to see what we're used to with the Premier League. And I think there's going to be a lot of people huffing and puffing, blowing after 70 minutes. And I think we're going to see a lot of those substitutions utilise them. But I mean, really, to bring us back to home advantage and current form, I mean, in terms of home advantage, I think that we've got to be wary of like that kind of bias, that heuristic we've spoken about, to look at that H and kind of think, oh yeah, that's how I'm going to decide things, because maybe now it's a bit of a level playing field, really. And it's really interesting as well to think about all of the lower six clubs, we'll speak about them in a little bit, who are saying that, oh, home advantage is so important. Is it really? Probably not, guys, actually. But just to move on to previous form, so Lucy Heine asks, given the break, is previous form irrelevant? I think that's another quite interesting one, isn't it?
I think certainly that, you know, you can look at who was in form before COVID hit and kind of ignore it to a certain extent. For instance, you know, like I've got players like, you know, Harvey Barnes as an example. He was in my team. He just banged in a hat trick. He was in the form of his life, this guy. But, you know, that was a long time ago. You know, since then, he might have had one too many pies or one too many beers in his evenings. Got to come back. No pre-season. Find a bit of a struggle to get back into that current form. And I think that is obviously the concern. And on the contrary, you've got players like Raheem Sterling, who was having a pretty shoddy recent form, but started off the season fantastically well with a hat trick. And he might be able to be a player to consider again, when he was a player that we were all ignoring because he was out of form, he wasn't playing well. And then you've also got the injured players as well, who are coming back as well, who might be in good form. So I think whilst you've got to factor it in, you know, like Bruno Fernandes, for instance, a player that was in form, just come to the Premier League looking really sharp, might still be able to maintain that sharpness. And I know he's a player that a lot of people are looking at. It's certainly something we need to consider here.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Nick. I think it's definitely going to be a little bit different. I think now that kind of flow has been interrupted of form, I think we're going to basically default back to how good quality teams are in terms of matchups, basically playing virtual FPL in real life. And I think fixtures are actually become a lot more important as a predictor. And there's a good few good examples of this, of the fixtures remaining. So United have a good run of games with only Spurs and Leicester of the remaining nine left. I think maybe Sheffield United as well, actually. So six of their remaining nine games are really good games. They play the likes of West Ham, Bournemouth, Villa, Brighton, Southampton. I did a little thread on them actually on Twitter if you want to have a look at that. And Nick, to your point about players returning, Rashford is one I'm really going to be pushing probably next week. But yeah, I think Rashford's going to be really, really interesting. 8.8, the talisman returning. Also, there's a ream of other teams with good fixtures. So Everton, for example, have Villa to begin with, and they've got teams like Norwich and Bournemouth to come in fixtures. I actually bought Dominic Calvert-Lewin in lockdown for Jota. This has borne out in the Bundesliga as well. So before this week, of the 8 free goal victories since the Bundesliga returned, 5 have been won by current top 6 teams. The current top 6 do seem to be doing very, very well in Germany. There's a few kind of freak results, like Wolfsburg beating Gladbach 4-0. But you know, it seems that sides with the bigger playing and coaching staff are just able to cope with the demands of playing with the intensity that we're going to see. And I think it's just going to devolve to kind of squad depth and squad strength. The better players are owned by the better teams on the most part. And I don't know, maybe it could even be more predictable.
Now, one thing that we need to kind of, I guess, caveat on that Bundesliga point that you just made is that the top 5 teams in the Bundesliga, so 5th is RB Leipzig on 55. To get to 6th, which is Wolfsburg, you're dropping down to 42 points. So there's 13 points between 5th and 6th in the Bundesliga. Whereas the gap between Manchester United, who are currently occupying that 5th berth with 45 points, to 11th place, which is Crystal Palace, is just 6 points. So I think you are seeing that there's just a much greater disparity between the quality of teams at the very top of the Bundesliga than at the bottom. Just, I know there'll be some listener who'll be thinking that, so might as well just say it. But at the other side of things, okay, it will have been about 100 days between Harvey Barnes' hat-trick that Nick enjoyed and I died over at the time, and the restart of the season. If I told you in a normal August that, oh, Raheem Sterling was good last May, so we should probably bring him in, people would look at you as if that's ridiculous. So I think that, yes, previous form has to be binned. And I guess tying in what you said, though, Tom, which is, you know, good teams are good, and so they'll do better. And from watching the Bundesliga a bit, I've noticed that it's flair players and players with a bit of acceleration that are going to be getting a lot of joy, or had been getting a lot of joy. So those accelerators, okay, it's kind of obvious. Look, players are a little bit unfit, they're less sharp, so if you have a bit of pace, you can get ahead. And that might be an even bigger thing with all the excess substitutions that we're going to have. The flair players, on the other hand, they play into something which is that football, in defense in football now, is so about choreographed moves. You know, your wing back goes forward, who tucks in? Do the center backs move more narrowly? Is there 3 center backs? Where does the defensive midfielder go? The center back positioning to block is so insanely important as well, about where they move. So even in parked bus defenses like Burnley, there's a huge like amount of choreography that goes into where James Tarkowski is positioned at all times. And when that's just a little bit off, flair players who are good at getting past people and, you know, doing that low percentage play tend to get that little bit more success. So you're thinking you're maybe Adama Traore, for example, who kind of fits the bill on both of those points, could be a really interesting player. And so it is that previous form is binned, but quality remains.
form is temporary, class is permanent, as they say. And maybe that's the resounding mantra here. Very interesting to see how that works out. Maybe, you know, the it could be a case of the speedy wingers versus the intricate sort of number 10s, maybe like Emi Buendia or, I don't know, Bruno Fernandes, as you mentioned, could be the men who come through. You know, I love Buendia so much. That guy's just an absolute legend. Anyway, and that 100 days gap is quite a nice segue into injuries and rotation galore. I've missed a good segue so much. But again, we're looking at the Bundesliga example and FPL El Clasico, and Billy B-Dog, FPL Dougal, asked, do we need a full squad in FPL, this is? And I think the resounding answer is yes. If we look at the Bundesliga, there's been so much rotation and injury and, you know, loads of players just randomly no-showing. It's definitely worse than Champman in some ways. And an interesting kind of touch point, a comparison point I found for this actually was the 2011 NFL lockout. So you guys all know I'm a huge NFL fan. That's an absolute lie. I know nothing about it. However, it seemed like a really useful sort of touch point because there was a pay dispute that year and they were locked out from accessing any facilities for 136 days. So normally in American football, I've learned 14 weeks is your preseason to get everyone fit, everyone ready, everyone roided up to go. That was cut down to just 17 days. And in the first 12 days of training camps that were held, 10 players ruptured their Achilles because of they were just not fit enough to do the demands that they were expected to do in terms of the intensity. And within the first month of return to actual, you know, proper games, the number of injuries recorded was double the average typically observed over the entire season in the first month. So we are going to see a lot of injury. We are going to see a lot of rotation. And as we've mentioned earlier, I think the intensity is going to be a little, just that little bit lower. It will resemble a friendly at times with some unfamiliar cast members showing up for the old reliables that we've got.
Those are some pretty gripping stats when it comes to the NFL. I hadn't ever heard anything to say to do with that. And that's remarkably interesting. But I think as well, something that we need to keep in mind is this with the whole full squad dynamic is that, okay, teams are allowed five subs. Now, why is that important, you might think? Well, what I suspect is that we're going to see that making four moves and holding your one move in case of an injury or whatever it might be until later in the game will become the new two subs. I think by default, you're going to see four subs being pretty normal in games, you know, and probably using that fifth towards the end to give some 17-year-old kid a run out. And that is going to put a much bigger stretch on things. Just add all the other things to do with injuries and problems to it. And even just the new rule change is going to make a pretty big change. And I think the likes of your Mason Greenwoods and your Martinellis and stuff will play into that.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, from the Bundesliga, we've noted that 89% of teams have used all five subs in their game. So those five subs are coming into play. And I've seen a lot of them have been quite early in the games as well. We've seen half-time substitutions, you know, so something that we've seen from Mourinho, he's potentially going to be doing a few of those half-time subs. Eric Dier off at half-time or 32 minutes if he's playing poorly. I think that is certainly going to impact FPL, and there's going to be a few frustrated managers, particularly with defenders that of course get more points if they stay on the pitch and have a clean sheet, if they miss out on those elusive clean sheet points. So, you know, from an FPL perspective, one thing I've kind of noticed is like you never really see centre-backs get substituted. It's always like going to be the full-backs or the wingers. So that might be something that we need to factor into FPL. So for instance, with Manchester United, for instance, if you're thinking about which defender to target, why not Harry Maguire? He's going to be the man that's going to be playing those 90 minutes. Your Aaron Wan-Bissakas or certainly your Luke Shores aren't going to be able to last the 90 minutes and get substituted early, potentially before that 60-minute mark. So, you know, that's something that should be factored in.
Yeah, certainly. I think we'll talk about the 90-minute men in the final section, but it's definitely true that I think there's going to be a lot of emphasis on that. And there's going to be so much disappointment, isn't there? There's going to be so much, oh my Lord, like FPL General is going to have a field day.
Yeah, I was thinking about FPL Generals. But
I mean, I was thinking about him as well, just because, you know, he always says, oh yeah, we need to stay away from injury-prone players. I think it would definitely be true of times like this, right? Where men who are famously made of glass, I mean, okay, maybe Danny Ings is someone who's turned it around a little bit now. But those sorts of players are going to be kind of under suspicion. We're going to be wary of them, which is also going to represent a little bit of an opportunity. But equally could, yeah, if you own a player like that, it might well be one that you'd be thinking about moving on. Just one further stat here. In terms of the Bundesliga's return, pre-lockdown there were 0.27 injuries per game. Post-lockdown it's up to 0.88 injuries per game. So yeah, we're definitely going to be looking at a lot of injuries. It's in line with what I've said about the NFL example, I think the players are going to be working their way back to fitness, and you are going to see, unfortunately, I mean, they're not like serious injuries, but like, you know, thigh strains, you know, groin strains, like just little kind of niggles which keep players out for 2 or 3 weeks. Like, you know, Kevin Campbell, for example, from Red Bull Leipzig, another cousin of mine, he came back for a couple of games and then probably has missed a couple just for having like little kind of thigh strain. That's like, and a lot of players, they seem to be kind of withdrawn with that at the last minute, which definitely seems to be happening a lot. So I think in summary, to injuries and rotations galore, watch out, and it's going to be part and parcel of the game. I do think with the coronavirus, I think it's just going to be normalized. Like, I know I'm not trying to do down what's happened and do down kind of the severity of the situation, but I think we see it in Bundesliga as well with the football and the coronavirus. I think you're going to just hear a lot more, oh yeah, he's in isolation because he's a member of his family's got coronavirus, so he's not playing this week, he won't be playing, he'd be unavailable for a few weeks because he's got a suspected case or he's got a case. Like, I know they had no people like prove positive, did they? But I think it's just going to become more and more normal. You just see it.
I think it's just if the whole club gets hit, a fixture could be cancelled, and that is something to consider, that there could be sudden cancellations. Say, like, the whole Liverpool team suddenly came out with corona because it spread amongst the team.
Don't have your captain and vice captain playing in the same fixture. You know, like this, like you'd have, you know, we often have that when storms are coming into the hit the UK or something.
I think I captained De Bruyne and had the vice on Aguero that week. So yeah, that was very painful. Do you guys think there could be a cause to change how things work? Like, do you think we could maybe have a few more subs, or like, how do you think we should manage to move on to the next point about finding value? How do you think we should kind of find that value? Like, do you think we should have the bench players being a bit more expensive than normal? Like, you know, over Christmas, are we looking at everything being like Christmas, where you've got so many games that you might as well invest in a beefy bench?
I've been giving this a bit of thought, and I think that what we're seeing regarding the clean sheets suggests that we probably shouldn't invest too much in good defences. So I'm thinking cheaper defenders, and definitely giving centre-backs a little bit more of an airing than I usually would as well, because wing-backs just are more likely to be subbed. Just you guys have touched on it, the rigours of the game now means that they're up and down the touchline all the time, distance covers, just by nature of it, was going to make them more tired or more prone to rotation. Either way, less interesting to me. But then when you get into midfield, I think this is where obviously the goals and assists comes into it for us from an FPL point of view. And so, look, there are a certain number of out of position, really good players who are expensive at midfield that we can purchase. And then you can pick up these pretty decent strikers who come off the bench, especially. I'm thinking again, to mention them again, your Martinellis and your Greenwoods, who I think provide excellent value, and especially now that bringing them on isn't as much of a cost, and I'm using my air quotes again for the second time in the podcast, to say that it's not as much of a cost for their managers to bring those players on just to give them a run out or just to change things up, because look, you've got so many bloody substitutes anyway that, you know, your Solskjaer shouldn't be too worried about bringing on Greenwoods. And so I think there's value to be pulled from into midfield from the strikers because they're enabled almost by the rule changes.
I think one thing you probably should factor in as well, though, is obviously with the five substitutes, even if your man in your starting 11's not playing, he's likely, and he's on the bench, he's still likely to come on for that 3 to 4 minute cameo. So you might have a strong bench that just is ultimately not utilised at all because you've got your one pointers in your starting 11. Oh, unfortunately, yeah. It's not like fantasy Bundesliga where you can swap out players whenever you want to make changes. So there's very much an importance of a strong bench in that game. This game's slightly different, so you might have your Mason Greenwoods, your Martinellis on your bench, and they might even get returns, and these guys are really good assets potentially for the upcoming future. Martials and people like that who played 57 minutes and got the 1 point, you're not going to be getting the Mason Greenwood 7 points, unfortunately.
That's true, and I think with Chelsea especially, like, they have a clone for effectively every player, you know, in the starting lineup. There's an extra sub who's like about as good that they can bring in, and it's going to really affect them. So maybe investing heavily in Chelsea assets especially might be a bit of a concern.
Yeah, having substitutes, literally in the economic sense, having substitutes is definitely something to watch out for. I mean, moving on to the final bit, finding value in limited / threatened minutes. FPL Physio asks, is it going to be maybe a case of consistent 11s with limited minutes, or, you know, how's it all going to work? And we did speak about this. I mean, just imagine Pep Guardiola with five subs. Imagine the carnage. And you've got to be asking yourself, you know, with City players, if you've got 66% of their time being on the pitch, lots of rotation, lots of sub 60 minutes threatening all, like, is that value at their rotated price? Maybe not, especially if they've got nothing to play for. But I mean, we have spoke about the 90-minute men a couple of times, and I had to do a little bit of research into this. There have been quite a few 90-minute men. You know, the likes of Harry Maguire, as Nick's picked up, one of the outfield players, James Tarkowski, Virgil van Dijk has played every minute. James Ward-Prowse is the only, I think, the only midfielder. Oh, no, Declan Rice, the ex-Irishman. So two midfielders and no strikers are in the 90-minute man category. After Virgil van Dijk, either of you want to hazard a guess who the second highest minutes played is for Liverpool?
Well, that's actually going to be pretty tough.
Henson? Wasn't he, was injured, wasn't he?
Injuries.
Do you know what? It's TAA. He's played 97.7% of the available minutes, which I was shocked by. And I had to go through his data on the website, but he has. Yep, he's played 2,550 minutes. Yeah, incredible, really. And we've also got players like, you know, Man City, just bear out of that point I said about the rotation. The highest minutes played is Edison with 85 available minutes. He's 73rd in the rankings in terms of 90-minute men. And KDB, he's second for City, 76th in terms of 90-minute men with 82.5% played. So yeah, quite a lot of interesting stuff there. And I just think, I don't know, it's going to be very hard to find the value. Maybe something we'll go into when we go into players more specifically next week. But I think maybe in common with the Bundesliga, trying to spot those players who are providing value for the money and value within the context of the rotation, the injuries, everything that we've spoken about is going to be really key here. Like, hence the mention of the likes of Rashford coming back from injury. Yeah. Nick, you love a bit of value. What do you think about value in the upcoming section? Of course, we'll talk about it a bit more next week, but what are your initial thoughts?
We've always talked about the importance of value. It's one of those things that we've kind of, you know, rammed into the listeners' brains, especially those listeners who've been listening to us for a long, long time. And I think certainly during this heightened period of uncertainty, I think value is very, very important. And, you know, having a flexibility to have some good value players on your bench, you know, we mentioned a few names, but, you know, others like sort of Todd Cantwell was a perfect example early on in the season, sort of a 4.5 million, now 4.7 million man that was, you know, providing the points, but, you know, a cheaper price. And we talked, and I mentioned Sterling as perhaps someone to consider because of his form, his lack of form, but he might have his form back. But on the contrary, the fact that Sterling is so expensive and we don't know how many minutes he's going to be playing, he's the kind of player that Pep would pull off after about 57 minutes to bring on Phil Foden, then that his expensive cost is going to obviously put us off bringing in like a premium asset like Sterling, especially if we can spread the value elsewhere and spend that money elsewhere more wisely.
I think for me, one thing that we should probably add to this thought is that, okay, the talisman theory is another thing that this pod has definitely talked about quite a lot over the past few years. And I think your talisman are, by virtue of their importance to a team, the less likely players to be substituted, rested, rotated, etc. And so maybe there is extra value being added to those Grealish type players who are just so important to their team that no matter what, they're not going to get moved. And so I guess your type, your Grealish types who are very important, and then you have your reliable types who do provide something extra and who are going to be there all the time. And I hate that Mark Noble always seems to be my answer to everything, but having a Mark Noble type player just sitting there getting his 2 points may not seem as ridiculous as it did if you can enable you to pick up your strong talisman across your midfield, across your strike force, that are just less likely to go. Okay, it's a slightly left field tactic for sure, but definitely not one to discount as much as my initial thoughts.
It's one of those where we're trying to kind of infer a lot of things, because obviously we just don't know how the comeback's going to be. And sometimes, you know, we see this at the start of every season as well, but like teams that look like they've got good fixtures or whatever, like, can be absolutely terrible. I remember Everton a few years ago had a great opening under Koeman and they were absolutely god awful, whereas you can have teams who, you know, look like they've got a few dodgy fixtures but actually turn out to be pretty good. I remember, I think it was West Ham a few years ago, we're in this sort of category.
You're giving me flashbacks of owning Theo Walcott, Tom. Yannick Bolasie as well featured as, oh god,
remember Hull City scored with like two bicycle kicks to beat Leicester, who were defending champions in the opening day, and Hull had about 13 players 3 days before the game.
Oh wow. Yeah, I think no matter what happens, if we're going to find that a lot of people when you kind of have your team set and you have this template, it's going to completely upend of what's going on. The one other thing to mention here in terms of the limited minutes is the weather, and obviously a bit of a sad point, and I looked at statista.com to look at the average temperature, because we don't ever tend to play football in June and July. it's actually 3 degrees warmer in June, and it's actually a jump of 6 degrees from May to July, 18 degrees per day in the south, at least. In the north, I'm guessing it doesn't get above 10. But I think it's probably worth just talking about that, because, you know, is that going to have an impact as well on longevity? Perhaps not, but it's a side point that I thought was quite interesting.
It might have an impact on those international players, actually, from those warmer climates, the likes of the sort of Brazilians and the African players, and even some of the maybe the Spanish and Italian players we've got in the Premier League compared to some of the English players, because those players will have grown up and be used to sort of playing in quite high temperatures compared to some of the English lads who are kind of more used to our cold and wet, windy weather. So, you know, that might have some factor, and it's perhaps worth considering, yeah.
I do throw my mind back to videos of Irish players melting at USA 94, of course, probably with 10 degrees of Celsius higher at that point than anything else. But yeah, I think Nick's point about your, let's say, players who were just used to playing in 30 degree temperatures, like we might get 2 game weeks with 30 degrees, but 25 or 22 or something might be something that will happen quite regularly. And your English players just won't be as used to it. They're on holidays in Dubai for that part.
I've got some flashbacks of Gary Cahill with cramp in Manaus in Brazil, but it's not going to be quite as hot as that, perhaps.
Oh, my. Well, I've assisted myself with this segue setup because, speaking of warm climbs, let's speak about going on the beach. So FPL Paddy asked us if Liverpool will rotate when they formally win the title. He used some other words to bait Liverpool fans, which I'm not going to go into here. And it's the question of motivation. And funnily enough, Anthony, this was the first podcast you ever came on WGTA for, back in pod 35, when you came on to talk about being on the beach and teams on the beach.
At that time, I think my main point was, I think Bournemouth will be on the beach. And I think you could almost say the same thing in about 2 weeks. If Bournemouth pick up 2 at the start, they'll be right back on the beach again. Ryan Fraser with his legs up all over again. But I think this is something that we've dealt with an awful lot in our FPL podcast. And in every season, there's always a clump of teams in the middle of the table who are pretty safe. So really right now, you're dealing with 5 teams perhaps who are at risk of relegation. You're talking about Brighton, who are 2 points above Bournemouth, who are in 18th, being, you know, in danger. But then you're talking going up to Southampton, who are 7 points clear. So really between 14th and approximately 10th, and maybe even 8th, if I'm being harsh on both of you, actually, because Spurs and Arsenal are both kind of a little bit adrift of the top 6, but or top 4, let's say, or top 5, depending on where you want to see is Champions League qualification. What are your thoughts on FFP and the rule of law in football? But depending on what you think is the line for Champions League qualification, you're still saying that within 3 game weeks, let's say, Spurs and Arsenal could conceivably be out of the race for European football and have absolutely nothing to play for next season. So I don't think the on the beach thing is going to be a huge problem, bar a few teams like Palace, Everton, Newcastle, Southampton right now. I'm not even sure if Nathan Redmond has any reason to get out of bed at the moment, in truth. But I don't think the on the beach otherwise should be a huge worry right now. And for Liverpool, no, it won't. They're consummate professionals. It just does not seem like they're going to be the type. Sorry, I hate to like go the opposite on Paddy there as a fellow United fan, but that Liverpool team aren't going to relax. They're not going to leave this, as he said, tainted title. I wouldn't agree with that, but I think it would be tainted if they did go on the beach for the final few weeks of the season and kind of ruin their particularly good record that they've held all season.
It would just be interesting to see how it goes, really, with them, with City, who, as Notion, as I mentioned earlier, have got nothing to play for. And what they do probably have to play for is warm themselves up for the Champions League in August. But during the next couple of months, what we're going to see, a lot of rotation, maybe some transition, you know, the likes of Foden being given game time to really get his feet under the table in terms of that kind of taking out from Dilver position he's slated to have. But I think you're right about the teams in the middle order. You know, the classic example is West Brom in 2016-17. I remember vividly they beat us, Arsenal 3-1, and they became mathematically safe in, I think it was game week 29.
I was with you that day, Tom. Yeah. We watched that together in a marathon.
Yeah, we did. And they failed to score in 5 game weeks after that, and they failed to win any of their last 9 matches, West Brom, after they became mathematically safe. So we might see that happen. On the other hand, it's the likes of Everton last year. When they were mathematically safe, they won 5 of their last 9 games. And Lucas Digne particularly was on fire. He scored 46 points in that period, and we'd all sold him to target double game weekers. So there you go. I think we're definitely delving into men's souls again, won't we, with motivation. We just have that interesting extra slant on it in terms of how things are. And just to tie that together a tiny bit, I'd mentioned my United's fixtures earlier on, but the race for the top 4, I think, is going to be really interesting. Because if you look at the amount of the top 6 and bottom 6 teams opponents have to play, you have United, who have got 4 bottom 6 teams to play and just 1 top six team left to play. You've got Chelsea, who have got four bottom six and three top six. Leicester with three bottom six and one top six. And then on the other side of it, Sheffield United are doing very well to be where they are, but they've got four top six teams to come, only one bottom six team, and Arsenal 4-4, Spurs 2-2. And maybe that could be a way of informing your strategy. Maybe that could be a way of kind of thinking, well, you know what? This motivation could be there for these players, for this team to be trying to push towards an objective, as opposed to a Burnley who are safe, a Palace who are safe, not going to care about them anyway. A lot of these teams that I've mentioned, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, Wolves, Spurs, Arsenal, do have players in them who are going to be of real interest to us given the conversation we've just had. So maybe kind of eyeballing them and thinking about the context and maybe how you might restructure your team, especially if you get an unlimited wildcard, could be a good idea.
I do wonder, just as an aside, if this is Jose Mourinho's last chance to kind of put himself back on his pedestal in the minds of Premier League fans, that he's now lost all of his excuses. They're not far off Champions League qualification in terms of points, and they have got, you know, fixtures that they can win with the squad that they have, and they don't have the players on or way injured. They don't have players who are stuck at military training now. Like, Son is coming back in better condition and shooting better than ever, if we're to believe the reports. So, like, Spurs actually might be one really, really, really interesting team to consider when this comes back.
I think ultimately, I think every club is going to have that motivation. You know, these are paid professionals. Whatever inspires them, whatever gets them going, I think they are going to try and play their best. I don't think you're going to see too many clubs lacking. I know that there are certain players perhaps who might have concerns on their minds that could impact their performances. We've seen obviously the likes of Troy Deeney spoken out in the press about his son's health and concerns around that. And that might mean, you know, some players do not perhaps have their eye fully on the game and they've got other things in the back of their mind, and you know that's fair enough. But I think I did have that point around Everton that Tom mentioned last season when we all sold Luca Dean and then he went on this brilliant run. I think you know, there might be some clubs perhaps that once they are mathematically safe, like Crystal Palace and Burnley, that do perhaps you know, take their foot off the gas and start thinking about planning for the following season. And with Liverpool, once they've won the title, you know, like I've heard people say, oh yeah, they might be going for the records and all focus on the records, but perhaps with the Watford game, that might not necessarily be Klopp's first thought again. He might be again thinking about the future and giving some minutes to the likes of Harvey Elliott or Curtis Jones or Nico Williams, actually, who's a young upcoming right back that could potentially challenge Trent for minutes every so often. And I know, and there was an interesting Q&A actually with James Pearce on The Athletic, where he talks about some of the you know, Klopp having high hopes for the youngsters and perhaps they'll get some additional minutes. So it might mean that some of our key assets like Salah and Mane do come off a little bit earlier. You know, the 57th minute, it's a risk, but that's a risk for all the clubs ultimately, isn't it?
I do wonder with Everton, actually, to focus on Everton for just a second. So are we saying that they're kind of, just being harsh, they're using the wrong adjective, but are we saying they were kind of a bit spineless and that they couldn't deal with the pressure? And when the pressure was off and they were on the beach, they were actually able to play with more fluidity, to use like a Football Manager type cliche, and play well. So if they don't have the pressure of being in the race for the top four / top five like they do now, and they're not under pressure from relegation, and they don't have the pressure from fans in the stands, will a team that are kind of as Everton-ish as this current Everton team are be particularly enabled in this scenario? Are they shy? Are they just particularly good when no one's looking? Are they the ultimate tree that fell in the forest?
Maybe. We'll see what Mr. Ancelotti can do for them. But yeah, no, it could well happen. Lying in 12th, middle of nowhere, they're safe, but they're not going to be challenging. Decent fixture on. Why not? I think we'll definitely come back into teams and players a bit more later on. But overall, just to tie off this discussion before we go to the break, I think you know, those three things that we've mentioned, home advantage and current form being in the bin, injuries and rotation galore, and the importance that we'll go into a bit more next week, but just to give voice to it now, of finding value in limited and threatened minutes that we're all expecting to see in football and by extension FPL. Very important things to bear in mind ahead of when we're picking our team / making our transfer / however we're dealing with the comeback. And as I mentioned, we'll go into the weeds of stats and in terms of teams and players next week. Right, let's take a break there and we'll come back for the Q&A.
Who got the assist?
Hello, so we're back, and the first thing to talk about is the FCA nomination, not the Financial Conduct Authority, not the Ferengi Commerce Authority, but it's the Football Content Awards. Now, we're not entirely sure how we've ended up on the docket, because we did no campaigning and no lobbying whatsoever. But nonetheless, we find ourselves there amongst luminaries such as Always Cheating and Planet FPL. If you do want to vote for us, you can go on to footballcontentawards.com/2020-voting. And well, if you want to out yourself as a listener on Twitter, #NerdPower, and vote that way, you have to write, "I'm voting for @WGCA_FPL in at the FCAs for #BestInFantasyFootballPodcast. You can find that online somewhere, I'm sure. Obviously, it's really nice to be nominated. I'm incredibly surprised that we were, given the fact we did absolutely zero canvassing. And maybe this is where my lack of a competitive gene, or a lack of being able to sell myself very well outside of, you know, I'm more of a lead by example kind of person, the lead by kind of throw the exhortation kind of person, more of David Beckham than John Terry, basically. But I think our pod is definitely something that I'm very proud of. I'm sure it's the same for you, Nick, and sure it's the same for you, Anthony. Like, we put a lot of work in, and it's all been self-taught, be it the website and the IT and everything like that that Nick worked out way back when. The production, I hadn't edited a thing apart from a CD when I was 13 before this. You know, we've been doing it purely for lols at a loss. I think we've lost loads of money doing this, but you know, we just do it because we love it. And really, I think the amount of work we do put in, yeah, okay, we're not creating more than one pod per week, but hopefully you'll see the amount of depth of care and preparation that we do for each pod. And you know, it's really nice to kind of, although we don't expect anything, and I, in terms of anything like this, it's genuinely a bit of a surprise. It's nice for that to be recognised, but I am a little bit uncomfortable about pushing it too much on Twitter, so I might do that too much. But if you do want to vote for us, then I've told you what, and we'll reiterate it later on.
Exactly. I think you summed that pretty well, pretty articulately, Tom. Yeah, it's just an honour and privilege to be nominated. And yeah, it makes us feel that, you know, all this hard work that we've essentially put in for the past few years, and it is a lot of hard work that goes into preparing and performing, doing each pod. You know, we don't just kind of go on straight away and start chatting away. We do a lot of analysis and preparation ahead, and, you know, just putting all of that effort in. It, you know, to kind of be rewarded with this nomination is appreciated. So thanks for everyone who did nominate us. And yeah, as Tom said, if you want to give us a vote as well, you can post on Twitter, as Tom said, or you can go on the Football Content Awards. So yeah, thanks listeners for all the support and the ongoing support that you've provided.
And I guess, look, if Tom's considering himself a David Beckham rather than a John Terry in this regard, maybe I'm kind of like Harry Maguire when he was with his brother as a fan at Euro 2016 for most of this. And then suddenly I've been drafted into the squad and I'm very much part of it. So maybe I can give more of a listener's perspective on why I think you should vote for the podcast. And it is quite obvious, it was to me as a listener and as somebody who came on as a guest multiple times before I was a co-host, the amount of work that does go into the pod and the amount of, you know, like, not only do the guys read a lot of articles to pull out stats and, you know, get whatever the hell The Athletic and Telegraph or whoever have said that week or whatever was on Twitter, the lads are often putting together their own spreadsheets, their own data, or at least mixing it up to try and, you know, pull something else out, such as the talisman theory, which is a completely, you know, WGTA created thing. And I think that, look, that's quite unique across the let's say across the FPL podcast spectrum. At least there's plenty of people that do things similar to that on Twitter, and I think that that's something that should be recognized. And I think as well, just, you know, the niche that the podcast maybe occupies within FPL Twitter podcasts as well, everyone is brilliant, everybody provides their different angle and their different opinions and their different understandings of football from where they've watched it, how they've watched it, and how they've followed it all their lives or through their short lives, whatever that might be. But I think what WGTA tries to delve into the stats and give you a somewhat objective analysis of FPL and the players within it, and it doesn't try to lead you astray with, you know, just a pro Spurs or a pro Arsenal bias like the lads might, you know, could do if they wanted to, or I guess I could give you a pro United bias too. It isn't like that, and I think that that's definitely something that you should consider as well, is that we do provide a niche here, and it would be great if you were able to support that. And we really do appreciate that we've been nominated. We'd really appreciate any support that you guys could give us on Twitter or via the website.
Oh, I'm welling up. That's very good, very kind of you, Anthony. Thank you. Just a reminder, the FCA's footballcontentawards.com, all one word, /2020-voting. Ivy will go along to the ceremony. It's a very, very nice surprise we got the other day, that's for sure. Right, let's move on without further ado to the questions. And we're trying to kind of kick the can down the road on looking at players and teams specifically. So there were a few really nice questions on that. Please just remind me next week about those if you have asked your question, because I think I did message a couple people saying, look, we're going to do this next week. Just remind me and we'll put them in as a priority next week. But this week's more about kind of the strategy stuff. And there are kind of a couple of kind of top level question things, but it's not really what we've been talking about too much. The first question is actually quite an interesting one off the back of the conversation we've just had. Is it's conservative or aggressive? So our mate Jeremy Lewis asks, will it make sense to be conservative in the first couple of weeks back? You know, don't use chips, roll your transfers, because we've got no idea what players will look like. Or, you know, Kitan Chopra said, you know, should we be attacking it? And Shiva at FPL asks, you know, how much should we kind of put into that double game week? And Andy Martin even kind of suggests bench boosting into that double game week. So, you know, how you kind of start off when we come back? Are we going to be really fearful about the uncertainty and just think, nah, actually, I'm going to be, you know, looking after my team here. I'm just going to be rolling it, basically doing the Nick Turtle strategy, or are we going to be attacking it from the front foot? What do we think without knowing the fixtures as an obvious context, but how are we kind of looking to approach it at the moment?
So I was just reading Andy Martin's question, and it actually made me think it's not something that I had really thought about in terms of bench boosting. I think that's certainly something that should be considered, considering it is a double game week. And like Tom said, and like we said, we don't know the fixtures yet, so there might be more doubles down the line potentially. But if that's the only double, then, you know, it could be the perfect chance to use that bench boost. Is something perhaps that should be weighed up, especially, I think I looked at my squads. And as I said, it's pretty set up at the moment for this double game week. And I've actually even ended up with quite a strong bench as well, with you know, a lot of playing defenders and stuff. So, you know, I could be tempted to do that bench boost if it's something on offer. In terms of the wild card, as I said, I'm reticent to use it. I've got my wild card. I've got my free hit. A few people are talking about even using the free hit, perhaps, for the double game week. And you know, that is... I think that's a very sensible strategy, depending on your team setup, of course. But, you know, with my wild card, I don't really want to use it straight away, especially in, you know, as we said, the form book's out the window. We have no idea who's going to be fit, who's kind of fallen out of their manager's favours over the last 100 days, and who's going to be suddenly selected, you know, by wild
Walker.
Card. And Kyle Walker, yeah, exactly. Luke Shaw, maybe. you know, as you say, it's been 100 days or so, isn't it? So, everything could have changed. We could see Martinelli being the new man at Arsenal and being a must-own. And if I've wildcarded, and it's cheap, so it doesn't really matter. But if I've wildcarded and I've got him in, then, you know, then I'll be playing catch-up with everyone else getting Martinelli. So, I think at the moment, I do prefer, actually, conservative or aggressive. I would probably say almost aggressive, to be honest.
What?
Surprisingly, even though I'm talking about not free hits and wild cards, I think, you know, I don't think there's any harm in perhaps doing a two or three transfers, taking a few minus fours, shifting things around from your current squad, especially if there's no wild card, just to get everything in order once we kind of have that first game week and we kind of know the law of the land.
Right. Now, I see where you're coming from. The only the big curveball that I want to throw your way is this. The game week deadline is going to close on Wednesday. There'll be midweek games, right? The first day back is a Wednesday. So come Friday, you'll have all the press conferences, but the game will be locked. So you can have chosen your team only knowing maybe four teams, what they can look like. And the rest of the teams, we're going to have no idea.
The scenes if one of those games is called off.
We are flying blind into that, right?
Well, that's why I'm quite happy just with the team I've got set up. You know, I don't want a wild card and shift it around when I've got a team that look relatively reasonable.
You
maybe
know what?
Jack Grealish could come in. It could be a few changes.
I mean, I was looking at Andy Martin's question. I completely kind of see where it's coming from. And I completely see what people are saying with the free hit as well. Like, obviously, it's a great time. And if it looks like there's no double game weeks, then I can probably see why that would be a great time to do it. However, the fact is that information is really, really, really valuable right now. And as we're seeing for the fact we're doing this podcast and saying, oh, actually, we don't know that yet. So we don't know what we're going to do. I funnily, I'm taking the Nick position and saying you've got to probably be fairly careful here and probably go into it without losing too much. Maybe use a free transfer, you know, get like some Grealish or, you know, Ender Stevens or something in for that double game week, because Sheffield United is actually pretty good. But I wouldn't be kind of throwing the baby out of the bathwater on it. I wouldn't be going overboard with it and using a chip, just because, as I said, you're going to be not locked out on the Wednesday, and then Friday there's going to be a whole ream of pressers that you are not going to be able to change your team for. Like, yeah, conservatism, I think, is going to be the key there, sadly.
Unfortunately, we probably have no knowledge at that point as well. When the deadline happens, we only met none of the managers have probably spoken to the press or anything. So,
dream scenario would be, imagine if they turned those two fixtures into a blank game week. Of course, they can't do it, but imagine if we started with a blank game week and then moved off into the doubles and people had a wild card, a free wild card, going into a blank game week that was followed up by a full slate of fixtures within 2 days. That would be unbelievable. But to pull back to the questions and Jeremy's question, which was just talking about, should we be conservative for a few weeks? Like, it does depend. And it's always does depend, doesn't it, on where your squad is, what rank you have, etc. Like, if you're me, which is, I think, I actually don't know what rank I am anymore. I think I was about 800k, but I'm happy to say I could be plus or minus 200k on that. Like,
just null and void it.
Yeah, just null and void it. Here we go again. But I do think that I might as well attack this. You know, it's like, okay, do I think that the Raheem Sterling route is the right one? No, but a player like Raheem Sterling, for sure. I just don't want to deal with Pep Roulette, you know, Pep Roulette squared, I guess, is what that we're going to have with five subs and COVID, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I don't think I can afford to be faffing about for 2 weeks when there's only 9 weeks in the season.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, well, obviously it depends. But I think it's just there's a few kind of things there to bear in mind and view perspectives. I think the information is just kind of spooling all the way back to when we had Neil Murray on the very, very early preseason Golden Rules, probably. He was saying that sometimes it's more important to wait for information. Information be more valuable than 0.1. I think information is going to be just so valuable that maybe just if your team's in a good state, that's kind of part one. Part two is you're not too concerned about your rank. Mine's about 350, I think. Okay, this could be a lot better, but it could be worse. I don't know, it could be worth just kind of sizing up, seeing what kind of form, where everything is, given everything we've spoken about, and going from there. But of course, that kind of conservatism, that reticence, represents a huge opportunity for people like yourself, Anthony, who are looking to make a difference and could storm their way into a free hit or a bench boost. I can just imagine it being a horrendous experience, you know, having that Wednesday, if that goes well, and on Friday you hear, you know, Pep saying, oh, we are going to rotate the team, oh, and you hear like all sorts of like, you know, news and tidbits about players not being injured, you know, your captain's got has a family member who's sick, so he's out for a while, and oh god, it could just be an absolute bananas thing. Maybe so
who was at a barbecue at the captain's house, because check the Instagrams, because they're not allowed to play, but they're not going to announce it until, oh geez,
yeah, it's not a trace and track's going to work anyway. But yeah, I mean, it might just be that playing it safe for just the short term might be a good idea, just with the double game week, using your transfers for that slash unlimited wildcard if you do get one, and then kind of from there plan to be more attacking. But you know, there's only 9 weeks, so there could be value, definitely, what Anthony's saying about just attacking it, just going for it, YOLO after all. Right, next thing, differentials without infos. So I've said we're not going to talk about the players too much, but this one was quite a juicy one to throw in, I think, that we can come back to next week. A friend of the pod, Late Riser, asks for a differential each of us fancies for the return and why. If I'm going to go first, it's Marcus Rashford for me. I picked him up in the United thread that I did. Still the top scorer for United. He's poo, but he's doing very, very well. And I think that people have forgotten about him, to be honest, because they sold him a while ago. One really cool thing that I didn't realise until I did the thread was that Bruno hasn't ever played with Rashford, and he's never played with Pogba either. So it's going to be really, really cool to throw them into the mix together and see what happens. United on FIFA are awesome, by the way. So maybe it could be worth, it'd be really cool to see what happens with Rashford. I've got Aubameyang at the moment, so I could well do that swap either straight away just as a gamble, or given double game week probably after that.
I think I've pretty much given my answer to this question already, but it's got to be Adama Traore, in my opinion. Just based on everything that we've it's almost collecting all the threads of this pod, this whole entire podcast together and suggesting him. But it is really that he's a quick player, but he seems to be someone who's physically in shape constantly. Like, you know, the preseason pictures are ridiculous of him. Mid-season picks are ridiculous. He's always in good shape. He's always extremely quick and a handful for defenders who are even at their full fitness, not to mind now. And then you put into that the fact that he's a flary player. He does the unpredictable thing. I think that's something that's going to be particularly good at exploiting less well-drilled and less sharp defenses. And he already had, okay, here I am doing the thing that I said exactly we shouldn't do, but he did have decent form towards the end of last season and had shown that he is now a good asset in fantasy football from the point of view that you can actually trust him to pick up goals, you can actually trust him to pick up assists. And I think he was reaching the point where he was becoming too good to drop. I know now that said he was rotated a little bit, but there was talk of injuries and niggles and things which have surely been ironed out at this point. And so I'd be hopeful that Adama Traore could be a very good pick.
Yeah, I was wondering if, you know, the likes of Mason Greenwood, who's a player with like absolutely massive potential, might have grown significantly over those sort of like past 6 weeks and now have a case for a starting berth at United or increased game time. Obviously with the Rashford being back, there might be more competition, but you know, this guy's only 4.3 million, 18 years old, but he's actually somehow managed 13 goals across all competitions this year with his diminished minutes. So, you know, there could be now the case that has that breakthrough, and with the increased minutes, the increased volume of substitutions might mean that he does get that additional game time to now start really emerging as a footballer. And you know, the Martinelli was the other one we talked about, where some of these players could suddenly really appear, and we see it every close season when the new season starts, these young players have pressed on and improved, and it might be his time now perhaps. Other differentials, I think you mentioned Rashford, but you know, the likes of Son, fresh from military service, could be a player we strongly consider, or even, you know, Harry Kane or Pulisic as well. It's kind of like open book again with a lot of these players that were supposedly out for the season.
Yeah, it'd be great fun with that, I think. One thing with Greenwood is that Ighalo signed an extension on his loan until January 2021.
So, best news in about 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, he does love the club, doesn't he? I think it's almost quite cute how much he loves it. And obviously getting paid a lot as well, but not as much as he was in China. But anyway, with Greenwood, I remember at the start of the season, we were just like, come on, Ollie, play him. If you had him in our FPL teams, and he never played him. And with Ighalo and maybe... obviously with Rashford coming back, with Martial in that number 9 slot, I don't know, it'll be good to see him break through, obviously for all sorts of reasons, his price in FPL, if that's young English player, etc. But I just would be worried about him. Martinelli, I really like the pick of, especially if Aubameyang doesn't sign that contract that he's apparently been given today. I think he is probably the future for Arsenal, and next year could be really, really interesting, especially. Right, next question. Mini league strategies. None of us doing very well. I think, Nick, you're in the top 3 in our mini league, aren't you, at the moment? FPL Booster says, with overall rank out the window potentially, what are our mini league strategies going into the final 9? Are these the things that we now care about?
Mine is just try and accumulate as many points as possible. It's ridiculous, but like try to do better than the people who are ahead of me, which is most of the league. So that basically means that I'll take those differential strategies. I think actually just you guys have really made me think that Spurs assets are pretty much going to be the way to go. You may end up, if we do get a welcome wildcard, as we've started to call it, then Son and Kane into my side would be something that would be something that I would do. And I think maybe think about what Tom said as well, which is something he'd learned from Champman FPL, that you know what, sometimes just pick the best players, don't get too knotted up in who owns who. Like, in truth, I've long dissociated my pride from this season. Like, I really don't care where I finish at this point, but I might start to care if I was doing well again, put it that way. So I might as well chase that.
Yeah, I think for me, mini leagues isn't something that I put too much focus on when I'm actually making my decisions and making my transfers. I think ultimately overall rank is priority. But I think if you are in like a work league and you're considering, you're thinking about knocking someone off their perch, I think what you need to do, if your ultimate goal is winning a mini league and you don't care as much about overall rank, then you've got to look at those differentials. Consider who your big rival in the league, and there's some of these paid league, cash leagues as well, who your rival is in your league, who they have, and bring in players that they don't have and captain them. That's the way to get forward against your rivals in your mini league. Of course, you know, when it comes overall rank, there's increased risk around this sort of strategy, which is why I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. But if mini league's your goal, then do something like that.
Shoot for the moon, basically. Yeah, no, I completely understand that. I think it depends how your mini league's done, basically. I mean, with ours, we've got monthly prizes and weekly prizes and stuff like that. I mean, if you make some money through the monthlies and through the weeklies, maybe that could be something to aim for, you know, just build 1 week teams, things like that. Like, there's lots of different ways you can do it.
If you find yourself as an FPL player who is in a work league, for example, right now, with players who are casuals who happen to be ahead of you because you're having a season like me, I think that the best strategy you can possibly deploy is to just not email them to tell them that FPL is starting back up again and hope that you can beat their ghost team. That's probably the best strategy you can do. Based on the information we have right now, definitely. That's your best move, is just stay nice and shtum and just pick popular players and just try and get ahead of them if they forget.
There we go. Cheat ourselves into victory.
Yeah, and then just arrive with an invoice for your prize.
I can make a British politics reference there, but I'm not going to. All right, well, that's your lot for this week. Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it? Just a reminder again, if you like what we listen to, and well, I don't know about liking us, but if you want to back us at the Football Content Awards nonetheless, you can find that footballcontentawards, allonewordcom/2020 voting. We're the best of fantasy football podcast. And on Twitter, you can write, I am voting for @WT_FPL in @the_FCAs for #bestinfantasyfootball.
We were Who Got the Assist. We will be back next week, provided that everything, of course, continues as it is and the season isn't cancelled again, to go back into the weeds properly on the teams and players to target. And Thomas will be going mad on the Twitter machine as well, putting out some hot threads. He's already got a United one out there for you to check out, and you should definitely keep an eye out for the rest of them.
Cool. We hope this assists you. Start to think about fantasy football again. Be out back next week. Really good to be back. Speak to you soon. Right.
Guys, bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist? Sports Social Podcast Network.